The mountain had exploded, and for 3 days darkness covered the land. When the sun returned at last, it was not the same golden sun that had shone down on the Roman Empire a week before. It was a counterfeit, gleaming dully in a colorless sky above a blasted world. On a gray hillside, 10 miles south of the volcano, a dark-skinned slave girl climbed a path in search of the flower that might save her dying friend. Nubia turned her head left and right, scanning the ash-coated slope for a gleam of pink blossom. She did not know what Neapolitan cyclamen looked like, only that it was pink and had a remarkable ability to cure. The doctor had called it amulet. But there was no pink here, only gray. Nubia climbed slowly past olive trees, figs, cherry, quince, and mulberry, all covered with the same soft crust of chalky ash. Here and there, black stumps showed where falling drops of fire had set an olive or palm tree alight. Some of the charred tree trunks were still smoking. It looked like the land of the dead, thought Nubia. The land of gray. The blanket of ash muffled sound, but Nubia heard a cry drifting up from the beach below. She stopped and looked back down. From this distance, the buildings around the cove seemed tiny. Through the thin film of ash that still drizzled from the sky, she could make out the Inn of Pegasus on the right of the cove by the headland. A few fishing boats, as tiny as toys, were drawn up on the beach near the boathouses where Nubia and the others had taken shelter from the eruption. On the other side of the cove were the baths of Minerva, the red roof tiles pale pink under a coating of ash. Between the baths and the boathouses were hundreds of tents and makeshift shelters, the refugee camp. Another wail rose from the beach below, and Nubia heard an anxious voice behind her. "Who's dead? It's not him, is it?" Nubia turned to look at the girl with light brown hair who was hurrying back down the slope. Behind her, 3 dogs sent up clouds of ash as they pushed through the oleanders and myrtles on either side of the path. "I don't think it is him," said Nubia, turning back to gaze down on the beach. "Dr. Mordecai said he wouldn't live much longer." The girls watched a coil of black smoke rise from the funeral pyre on the shore. Around it, tiny figures lifted their hands to the hot white sky and cried out to the gods. Nubia shuddered and reached for her mistress's hand. Flavia Gemina was more a friend than a mistress. A freeborn Roman girl, she had bought Nubia in the slave market of Ostia to save her from an unimaginable fate. Since then, Flavia's kindness had been like a drink of cool water in a desert of pain. Even now, Nubia took courage from Flavia's steady gaze and the reassuring squeeze of her hand. After a moment, they turned wordlessly and continued up the gray mountain, a dark-skinned girl and a fair-skinned one, wearing torn and dirty tunics, searching among the ashes for the plant that might save their dying friend, Jonathan. From the beach below, 8-year-old Lupus saw the girls start back up the path. They were easy to see, the only spots of color on the gray mountain. Flavia wore a blue tunic, and Nubia a mustard yellow one. The golden-brown dot pursued by 2 tiny black dots must be Scuto and the puppies. Lupus was just turning back to the pyre to watch the body burn when he thought he saw something move much higher up the mountain. A person wearing brown. No, 2 people. Then a gust of wind blew acrid smoke from the funeral pyre into his face. His eyes watered and blurred. When he wiped them, he could still see the girls and their dogs, but the other figures had disappeared. Lupus shrugged and turned back to the burning body. The dead man's relatives were crying and moaning. 2 professional mourners dressed in black helped the family express their grief with shrill wails. Lupus let their cries of pain wash over him. He didn't know who the dead man was. He didn't care. He only knew that the man's bloated corpse had washed up on the shore around noon, one of many in the past 2 days. Lupus stood close enough for the heat of the flames to scorch him, and he kept his eyes open, though the smoke stung. When the professional mourners scratched their cheeks, he scratched his. It hurt, but it brought release. He needed to feel the pain. The heat of the flame seemed to make the blackened corpse shiver, and for a moment, Lupus imagined it was the body of Pliny, the great admiral who had treated him with courtesy and respect, but who had died gasping like a fish. Then the body became that of Cleo, 7 years old, bright, brave, and cheerful. Cleo, who he had tried twice to save, and failed. Finally, he saw the body of his own dead father. The father whose murder he had witnessed, powerless to stop. The father whom he had never properly mourned. Lupus tore at his cheeks again and let the pain rise up in him. Around him, the mourners wailed. At last, he too opened his tongueless mouth and howled with anger and grief and despair.